So today on Vulnerable, we are welcoming Kimberly J. Brown to the podcast. She is an amazing actress. She's also a wonderful singer. And many of you know her from Halloween Town and Quince. But many of you do not know just how far back she and I go. So in New York City, Kimberly and I grew up together from the time we were around 7 or 8 years old. We have been in each other's lives and not been in each other's lives. So it was really fun to learn all about the different things that she has been up to, whether it was soap operas and Broadway shows, and how she is doing ever since Halloween Town and Quince. I'm Christy Carlson Romano, and this is the Vulnerable Podcast. Guys, today on Vulnerable, yes, we are missing Brendan Keith Rooney. He's not here. He's busy. But what's cool about that is that he is not here. I'm sad that he's not here, but I'm also happy that he's not here. Because we get to chat just Kimberly J. Brown and I.
We just get to hang and chat.
It's different when you bring a husband in the room when you're chatting with your good friend. Because it's like we have our own language that, by the way, we have perfected for decades. I don't know if people know this. I think that people think that me and Kim maybe have known each other since Disney days, but it actually goes way, way, way back. And we're going to talk about that today on Vulnerable, amongst many other things. But like, legit, I would say that one of my oldest and dearest friends is Kimberly J. Brown. She's with me today. So hi, Kim.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, is your hair darker by chance? We're getting to see each other over Riverside, but it looks beautiful.
Thank you. It's actually not any darker than when I saw you in March. Yeah. Okay. No, it's not.
Okay. No. It looks great. Cause when I grew up, I remember you having like reddish hair.
My hair naturally is very dark brown.
Okay.
And it kind of, it was a little lighter, and then I went blonde for a while, all these, you know, different variations of highlights and blondness. And then
Kim,
I kind of darkened
it. I have been, honestly, our industry is notorious for making you feel like you're not enough, right? So you're always like, yeah. I don't know about you, but for me, it was like, I had red hair. I had jet black hair. I had blonde, bleach blonde hair. You can Google these pictures of me. And that is the evolution of Crazy Christy in her 20s. And like, it's like, oh, I remember exactly where I was in my emotional, you know, I don't know if you want to call it like upheaval, but like I could be like, oh, that's why I went blonde. Because when we grew up back in the day, did they or did they not always have a brunette, a blonde, and like they always had like a wild card choice. back in the day when we were growing up in the early 90s toy commercials, which you yourself have done like hundreds of.
There was always just an interesting selection, but like certain companies were known for having very strict standards as to like how they wanted the kids to look. And it was a very an interesting introduction as a kid to weird company standards that it was like, well, I don't know, like her tooth is a little loose. So I don't know if she's going to be, you know, like it was so,
oh,
I remember being a kid trying to understand what all of it meant. It was, yeah.
Do you remember your first flipper?
Oh, yes. Yes. I accidentally threw away my flipper at some point when I got older, and I was devastated because it was like that little piece of my professional childhood that I was like, no, I lost it. Like,
So I don't know if everybody knows what a flipper is. So a flipper is a fake tooth, like a denture that a child would put on when their teeth were going missing so that they would have the perfect smile to be able to work. And you'd actually have to use denture glue in a little tiny person's mouth, which I don't know if I could do that to my kids. Like, I think about it now. Not that it was that bad for us. I think we were probably like 8, 9, 10, right?
Yeah.
Until you start losing your teeth.
I think
it's
so,
like seven is when you start losing your teeth, which I didn't remember these like dates and ages until like my kids. And now I'm like,
sure,
realizing.
I don't. Yeah. It all kind of blends together, I think, when you're young. And you're like, what? I don't remember how old I was. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally blends together. For the longest time, you know, and Kim, you probably have a lot more like awareness. But tell me what you think. There is so much of our childhood that is missing for me. Like, I'm not saying like this is trauma based or anything else, but
right.
it could also be that we learned so much at such a fast rate. It wasn't that we were just learning piano. It wasn't that we just were learning, but like we were not only perfecting our little crafts as fast as possible to book as much work as we possibly could in a competitive environment with other kids who were learning as fast as they could to book as much as they could, but we were also learning different material like all the time. And if you weren't going on the audition and learning that material, you were meant to learn as much material as you could so you could bring it into an audition room.
Yes, absolutely. And there, I mean, I was on a soap when I was a kid. I started on the show when I was eight or nine. I was on the show for 5 years. And that was the best kind of training ground in that sense, because not only did I work with great people, but we would do at least an episode a day. And it was just, I mean, the amount of dialogue and scenes, like you don't, it was just pages and pages. And that was kind of the norm for me in a sense. Like that's what I kind of started with. And so everything else after that was like, I could, but I think a lot of it, I think it was kind of a combo. I think I understood a lot of it, but some of it, I did have a good memory in the sense that I think I was able to pick it up quickly. So it was probably a combo of me seeing some of it and then either having my parents read it with me or run it with me kind of thing. But
yeah,
it's amazing because I think about that now because I was just on General Hospital for a little bit last year and I was like, oh, yes, here we are back to like an episode and a half a day. Like, oh, my adult brain doesn't work like the kid brain did. Like, I got to take a little bit more time with these lines.
You know what? You're right. You really do have that elasticity that like sort of just like you can thrive in that environment if that's what's normal for you. And honestly, though, I will say this. What I liked about growing up in the New York child actor world, it was that I think there was a little less of an like an insulated environment that the entire area was dedicated to that, right? So like, for example, you could go to the commercial, but if you didn't book the commercial, outside of feeling like, oh no, I'm not like a big booker, like that was the big term, right? Like, oh, I'm not a big booker, but so-and-so books like a certain number of commercials a year.
I feel like everybody went through waves though, in a sense.
Yes,
like sometimes
for sure.
You would like, you know, and then like, it would just be different. You know,
it was interesting.
It was different people, that would kind of go
in and
out of like, of getting things and then taking a break and then somebody else.
Yes, absolutely. And it was also probably just where we were at physically.
Yes.
So much of that has to do with the demo that they were trying to reach, which now everybody understands all that stuff. But we certainly didn't at that age and our moms didn't either. But here's the thing. So the commercials weren't, you couldn't take that personally because you yourself, even as a kid, you were like, this is just a toy commercial. Meanwhile, it was the Broadway or it was the theater auditions that were the intense, those, the cattle calls, the open calls, those ones for me were more like, this is like life or death, like leave it on the pavement, sing your heart out. I don't know. Do you remember your first like Broadway show audition? Because Showboat was your, was it your first?
Showboat was the third show I did. That was the,
oh my gosh.
I remember my first one. It was a play at Lincoln Center called Four Baboons Adoring the Sun. It was a John Guare play.
I remember
And
that.
I was seven, I think. And I do remember bits and pieces of that audition. And I don't remember there being, I remember there being maybe a little bit of like scenes, but they also asked me if I could tell them a story or something I was doing in school. And I remember I recited There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly poem. And that was
You're
the
like,
audition.
I nailed but that audition.
I'm like, yeah, I knew that one.
Nailed
but
it.
I do remember auditioning for Les Mis and singing solo at eight. And I think about that now. And that's another one of those situations where I did not have the same nerves that I do now. There wasn't always that same level of like pressure and awareness with me as a kid. It was like, oh, this would be really cool. But it just wasn't that thing of, oh, I didn't book it. Like, I don't know, my kid, you know, I just moved to the next, okay, so what are we going to do tomorrow? And my parents were always really great at focusing on that instead of the audition. Like, okay, well, let's, you know, go to the park or, you know, there was never that kind of pressure in that way. But
yeah.
Then when I ended up doing the show and all that they taught us at such a young age, and we had to be at places and do a lot of like the backstage prep work by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot. Like now that I'm older, I'm like, that was a lot to give an 8-year-old kid. And then, you know, the stage turns and you're sitting on the stage by yourself and you just start singing to the whole
darkness.
Theater. Yeah.
To darkness too. Like yes. As a little kid, like my daughter, granted, I wouldn't say she's not afraid of the dark, but she has nightlights.
Dua Lipa.
You know, when I play my music to people who I really respect or look up to, then I hear my songs in a different perspective.
Cardi B.
I know what it feels like when you feel like everybody turned your back and like, don't ever think it's because you did something wrong.
Harry Styles.
I feel like I'm falling more and more in love with making music each time I get to do it.
You know these artists for their songs, videos, and epic performances.
But they have so many stories beyond their fame.
That's what we're here to share with you on the Spout Podcast.
We sit down with some of the biggest names in music.
And along the way, our guests reveal stories that even their biggest fans may have never heard before.
Check out the Spout Podcast to hear famous people spout off about more than what they're famous for.
And find out who's spouting off next.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
And when you're looking into the black abyss as a little kid and you're singing your heart out and then you have this uproarious applause... What does that feel like? Do you remember what that was like?
I do. I remember the first time I went out, because the first time you meet young Cosette in the show, the stage rotates and the Fontaine and Valjean scene ends before. So you're kind of sitting listening to it end. And I remember having like a little bit of nerves and then going, okay, here I go. But for me, actually, the blackness, like I wasn't sure what it was going to look like. But I think because it was... so dark and you couldn't see people's faces, it was almost comforting for me because it wasn't, I couldn't tell what people were thinking. And so I just sat and sang and once I did it like the first time, I didn't want to leave the stage. And that was always, I just was always like, oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I want to go back and do it again.
Oh, that's good.
Throughout my whole career, that's always been the barometer for me, frankly, like, you know, to see if I'm still enjoying doing this and acting and still, you know, and to make sure I still get that same level of like fulfillment from it. But
100%.
Yeah. I think it was kind of comforting in a sense to have it so dark, but it was also, it was strange.
It's a surreal moment,
yeah,
for sure.
It is.
It's like almost like you're suspended in space through time, because where else? Like, I mean, look, social media, you get a lot of attention, you get a lot of eyeballs on your TikTok within a 24-hour time frame or whatever, and but not in an instant necessarily. Like if you go live, okay, granted, if you go live, you could be performing live, and like that's sort of the same thing as if you were performing live. When you see the number of how many people are joining, like you're live, you can know that there's that many people's eyeballs on you. So in some way, that's the new proscenium is, you know, your iPhone, the edges of your iPhone are the new theater proscenium in a weird way. But like, there is nothing quite like a live, you know, how many people were in the theater of that one? The Orpheum? Was it the Orpheum?
It was the Imperial Theater. And I don't know, but probably...
Hundreds.
I don't know. Yeah, at least, I think.
Yeah,
but
hundreds.
Yes. And that was when it really clicked for me, in the sense of like, oh, wow. I remember being like, oh, my gosh, I'm out here all by myself. And here I go, you know.
And you loved it. And you loved it.
Oh, I did.
Amazing. I loved to hear that.
Yeah.
Why do you think kids love to perform? What makes a kid love to perform versus not? Is it a personality thing?
Perhaps. I mean, I think I always enjoyed trying on other personalities and other behaviors and characters and stuff. Is one of the reasons why my parents put me in a performing arts or some kind of class, because I was constantly dressing up at home and just, you know, doing stuff in the mirror and like just, I had several imaginary friends. Like I was just, I was very busy in my life.
You were
very busy.
I was booked and busy before I was busy.
Yeah. And so they put me in like a theater class or performing arts, just an arts class to kind of, you know, get it out in a sense and have a place. And that was...
Wait, was this in Maryland?
It was in Maryland.
Yeah, right.
And then we started, I think the story goes, if I remember correctly, from what I've heard, because I do not remember this class at all.
Of course not,
but,
right?
But I was like 4 or 5, and some talent scouts came down from New York, and I think I was one of the only
class?
Ones. Yeah, to kind of watch the kids.
Okay.
And it was never really, like, I think my parents' goal in the sense of, like, let's put her in the class so she can get into the business. But they, people came, and I think I was one of the only ones that they said, well, if she ever wanted to do it professionally, like, we would recommend, like, that she do it. She seems like
and
a good candidate.
And come to New York. And see, Maryland isn't too far from New York City.
No,
what
it's
was
only
it
like
for
a
you?
4-hour drive. So we started driving back and forth and auditioning and that sort of thing. And right when I did a little bit of print, I think I did a music video. I did my first national commercial I was cut out of. And then I think
I'm fine. We've accepted it.
No, we have, we have years of therapy later. No, I'm kidding. There have been several things that I've been cut out of since then. So it was only an early preview of here, this
lesson.
Is your life. This is the career you're choosing. Enjoy. But right when we were kind of going, okay, this is, maybe this is where we kind of slow this down and this has been fun, is when I booked 4 Baboons Adoring the Sun. And then I kept working from there, and we got an apartment in New York, and showboat after Les Mis. And then I was doing Showboat and Guiding Light at the same time for a bit. I think about that now and I'm like, woo.
That is crazy. Okay, and now let me get this right. So you didn't go to PCS, right? Did you go to performing arts school or you did homeschooling?
No. I did, I started in public school, and then, we did an independent study program, I think, from second grade on. My first grade teacher actually said that I was a good candidate for it just outside of, I think it was even before we had thought about doing the business or anything like that. She just had said that to my parents separately. And then, I did independent study, and I ended up using a program that, which it doesn't seem as exciting now because technology has progressed so much, but we had classes on videotapes. So I would take that to the show and stuff. And it was different then because they didn't have the same, New York didn't have the same regulations and stuff for kids like they do now. So
really?
Yeah, they didn't it wasn't.
Like, if you took your kid out of school, that was it. It was your job then to get the hours?
Well, I mean, when we were filming, it wasn't, there wasn't, when I moved to California. Yeah, mm-hmm. When I moved to California, then suddenly it was we have to do 3 hours of school, and we're only,
lame. I know what you're talking about. It
was
so lame.
Yes.
It felt like prison. And
it
that
did.
Was, and that's not fun because, you're talking to two girls that are, you're you've got a CPA license, right? I don't know if a lot of people know how smart of a cookie you are.
I have an associate's in accounting, but please don't ask me to balance a damn thing because I
if
won't
I get
remember.
In trouble, I'm coming
but
to you. Okay?
I have
the taxes,
and then I ended up getting a bachelor's in business management because I wanted
And it's funny because that was your choice to get educated in that regard, and you're still in the business. A lot of people really made education unsexy. I don't mean to use that term in relation to the childhood development, but they made it seem like it was not meritorious. Like it wasn't something, and I hope I'm using that word right because I need more education.
You are
apparently
using a lot of fancy words today. I'm here
trying
for it.
Really,
I'm here for it.
Really hard.
You're doing
so
great.
Please feel free to troll me. So wait a minute. So you're independent studying. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't know if people understand how crazy that is to do 8 shows a week as a, you said, a 7-year-old. And then doing your filming of the many, many different lines in the day. So let's bring it up to when we met, which was Broadway Kids, but I was probably around 11 or maybe 11 or 12.
That's so
I believe.
Funny.
But I feel we met before that during the whole commercial audition scene.
Yeah. I feel like there was a lot of people that we met through that, just seeing each other at a lot of auditions.
Vibed,
yes.
And they were like, oh, you're not a crazy, mean-looking mom.
let's hang out.
Yeah,
it was great because a lot of the moms would kind of, the ones that kind of got along and would huddle and everybody would try to like help each other out, or, you know, have you heard of this happening or this, and kind of look, to look out for each other. And in turn, I think it encouraged that in all the kids, because we were just there to have fun anyway. And it was always disappointing when you would meet somebody and their kid that was not, you know, that was a little bit more competitive or whatever. And it was just like, it doesn't have to be like this. Like, we're all, so much of this is so out of our hands. Like, let's just, you know, have some fun, and whoever's kids gets it, you know, like
that. I will say that in LA, competitiveness is generally the norm, I think, at least within the younger, and I feel like there's a lot less, like, unless they're in the same class or the same school or they've worked together and something kind of like that, it's less fraternal that way. And in New York, the New York actors, they were, I mean, we know, like, the casting agents were always like preferring New York actor kids because they thought they were more like genuine and more like less polished and less like, I don't know, shticky. I don't even know if that's the word. But there was, I remember when we were coming up, the feedback a lot of time was, ooh, we want the New York actor kids. Like, they've got theater background, so they're, like, super professional, and they know how to hit their marks and, like, remember their lines.
I don't remember that as much, but I'm sure, yes. It's funny that I would get sometimes feedback that I remember. The one I remember the most was I was from Maryland, and I guess said certain words as Marylanders do.
Oh, really?
They noticed it in New York. They were like, "Oh, she's got a little bit of a dialect accent thing there," and I'm like, "What?
That's
No, I don't."
Not a single time in my entire life have I ever heard you and been like, "Oh, that's a Maryland, Baltimorean accent."
Now that when I go back, because my sister still lives there, I have so much family still there. Yeah. I hear it in certain words, so I guess, but I just always thought that was the strangest thing, like, from, like, movies and stuff like that.
They were like, it's like what Tina Fey does, right? She does that accent, right?
I think she does that a little bit of that sometimes. She also does, is it Pittsburgh? Or, like, it is, sometimes the East Coast, some of those words, they, sometimes I hear it, I'm trying to think of it, sometimes it's like home, or I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
It's the O and the A's, I think, sometimes, because I hear it, like, in my sister sometimes when I call her. I'm like, oh, there, it's so light. We learn what different, like, dialects are by, like, well, where, okay, so you want a Southern, but which, you know, where is she from? I need to know, because they're all so different. It's so funny.
Oh, and now you can just go on YouTube. You can just go on YouTube and teach yourself so many aspects of acting that we, as young actors, had to scramble to find out how to do. We had, like,
We went to the library and had to pull up stuff.
Oh my God, that's so true.
There were no computers. Like, there wasn't, you know, it was like, okay, let's go try to find a recording in the library so you can listen to it a couple of times before your audition.
Dude, you just pulled up a memory for me that I didn't even know was there. But okay, speaking back to the whole competitive, like, momager people. Mm-hmm. So there was a couple people, and I will not say names out of respect to any of those people because they've all grown up and I'm sure they have very amazing lives or they have their own lives. But there was one mom that I remember would dye her kid's hair blonde.
Oh, wow.
And she was our age. She was like 7, 6. It was in the early stage of my career. And I remember she would bleach her daughter's hair so that she could be like bubbly, bright blonde to like book the commercials. And I remember her mom being pretty like dance mom, cougar lady. Mm-hmm. And then there was another mom who, Russian, that's all I'll say.
Okay.
And her daughter was super talented, and it was hard. You know, eventually that girl decided to get out of the business right when you and I were kind of like coming to LA and like we kind of started our next chapter in our in our careers. Because what happened was, is were you repped by Abbey Bluestone or SEM&M?
I was for a while. Yeah.
See, this is why people in the story, they just have to listen to this podcast and try to come up with a trajectory for our relationship, because there's a lot of different circles that coincide. We need a Venn diagram of Kim and Christy.
I know. Yeah.
And yeah, like we were both repped by, I guess then, Anne Lauren and Abbey Bluestone.
Yes, I love them.
Abbey Bluestone ended up moving over to Innovative Artist in LA. Mm-hmm. And Abby was the reason I even tried to go to LA right after my Lincoln Center show, Parade, had kiboshed, and we got severance pay because LiveEnt went broke. And so we had like two weeks of pay.
And Showboat was a LiveEnt show, but I think I left the show before it ended, but it was probably it was probably a little bit, it was probably before Parade. Maybe Parade was, when did you?
Footloose. So Footloose became like this new version of Broadway where people were coming to Broadway to be entertained, not to be moved and like, you know, throw the Tony nominations around. Like it wasn't mm-hmm. like that sort of high art form anymore. It became.
I saw it on Broadway. It was great.
Footloose?
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it. But see, and that's the thing is like, when you're on like a Lincoln Center show, people can't help but hate on that commercialism. And that was where, that was when basically Disney was coming into Times Square and fixing it up. You and I were auditioning in like the 90s Times Square. You know what I mean? Like that's where we were going. Well, how did your mom deal with that? So was she like super strict about keeping you safe? How is your mom? Because I know mom was
nuts. Always, yes. I do remember. I mean, I still use it to this day in the sense when I'm walking around wherever I am, really. But like there was always a sense of they taught us about how people would come up and try to in teams and try to talk to you so that one person could come up and like try to take something from you while the other one distracted you. And like there was these certain things that they taught us about, like because they were like, New York is not, you can't trust everybody that comes up to you. And you know, you always walk with a purpose and like all these things that I learned very young that I feel myself doing sometimes when I'm stopped like in LA or whatever, you know, you kind of look around a little bit to make sure, you know, you're always aware of your surroundings, I guess. And that was something that was ingrained in me very young because of New York and because it happened to us, I think, at least once.
Really?
We had a bag swiped. Well, it was like, I think we were unloading some bags from the van or something one night and somebody distracted my dad and there was some bags out on the street. And so somebody else walked by and literally just picked one up and walked off.
Okay.
Maybe that was also one of those times that, you know, my parents used as a, like a learning, a lesson, but it was like, oh wow. It was just so quick and, you know, nothing scary at all or anything like that, but it was just like, it showed how easily, and I think there were some other times too, but it was,
hey, do you remember that one apartment building that everyone wanted to live in because it was rent controlled and super cheap and affordable? It was the Equity Buildings. And you'd have to get on a lottery to live in these places. And they were on, and still are, I believe, 43rd and like 10th and 11th. Like avenues, like they're way down there. I don't know if they're still there, to be honest, because of how real estate market is these days. But
totally,
they were meant to be housing for the theater actors. And so they were rent controlled. You know, people would sublet them out if they went on tour. And so you'd be able to find like, you know.
Okay. But I don't remember that as much. We had this same apartment down on the Lower East Side for years and years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys end up buying it or?
No, I think we just ended up, we were up in the Upper West Side, I want to say at first. And then we were down on the Lower East Side for years and then ended up.
Yeah,
moving to California after that.
Okay.
I was still going back and forth too because I was finishing up a storyline on the soap. And then I think it was then I got Halloween Town and Tumbleweeds back to back. And I kind of had to go, okay, sorry. Like I can't do
that. You know,
what's
crazy. You and I kind of crossed paths so many different times, but what I find really interesting, Kim, is that you worked with Disney Channel way before I did.
Oh, I did. I don't remember. Yeah. See, I don't remember what, cause I think,
so I was 16.
I guess that makes sense. Cause I did Halloween Town and when I was 13, because that was like the only second or third ever original Disney Channel original movie they did.
Okay.
And I remember, I think the first time running into you was at, you were at the, they did like a premiere for Quince. And that was, I think, when I remember running into you in like Irvine or something. It was
My God, really?
You were
Orange
there.
County. Wow.
It was
really?
Like, yeah, the amphitheater down there. I remember it was like a little event they were throwing for the release of the movie. And I remember you were there and I was like, wait a second. Like,
man,
and I
that
think
must
you
have
were
been
already doing Even Stevens at the time. Like,
oh, wow.
Because I was probably 16
well, I'm 30.
Or 17.
Okay, so I'm 38. How old are you?
I'm 37, but
okay, so we're the same age. Okay, so you were 16, you were like 16, 17 during Quince?
When Quince came out, yeah.
So then that means that we were filming.
So I think that's, that was, because I knew you were working on Even Stevens, but that was, I think, the first time we actually ran into each other.
Why weren't you on Even Stevens? Why weren't you on more Disney Channel, like, original shows? That's interesting to me.
Couldn't tell you. I don't know.
It's weird how they were trying to set apart. So, you know, they had Lee Thompson Young. They had the Jet Jackson franchise, yes. which was very different than... They were doing a lot of different things. The first generation, which you are the first generation of Disney Channel stars. You're probably one of the first. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I guess in that first wave of when they were really launching, all their original movies and everything.
Yeah, there was the Jersey.
Yes.
And there was the famous Jet Jackson. And a lot of those, I think, were shooting in, well, the Jersey was in Burbank or something like that. But Jet Jackson, I believe, was in Canada. And it was like, it was a big show for them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, all Disney Channel had was like Mickey Mouse Club repurposed, like, you know, reruns. And they did a lot of concert content. Like,
yes, I did go to a concert. I did go to a Jessica Simpson concert. Yeah. Yeah.
Music
this one
Mania
was like a
whatever.
Random stage. But yeah, there was some of those events sometimes that they would be like, hey, do you want to go? And I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It was a fun time to
and
be around.
And so weird. That was another one too.
Oh,
that was in the early days. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So weird. I almost forgot about that show, which should not be forgotten. It was a great show.
No, it was. Yeah.
So they were experimenting with all of these different, like very different shows. Mm-hmm. And now when we look at them, it's almost like, you know, the content you're getting when you're turning on a Disney Channel show. Like, yes, there's variations of it. Is it animated? Is it not?
Yes. Yes.
But like for the most part, it's branded very specifically. Whereas when we were kind of coming on board to it, we were bringing that essence, I feel, that a lot of those casting people were talking about, that varied, nuanced performance that, like, you know, I went to high school with Lee Thompson Young. He was a really deep individual.
He was amazing.
Mensa, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was in Mensa.
He was brilliant. Yeah.
He went to USC. Like, he was top of his class. Like, he was an amazing human being that we lost way too soon.
Way too soon. He was, I think I only met him once or twice, and he just was so sweet. And I worked with a studio teacher that had worked with him, and she just was like, no, you have no idea how brilliant he is. Like, truly
Lee
brilliant.
Went to my school. He graduated with me at PCS. So PCS, for people who don't know, is called Professional Children's School. Props to them. It's a wonderful private school. It is a bit pricey, but they always worked with me on financial aid because I needed it. And they really, really got
That's
me
awesome.
Through. Yeah, they got me through. And shout out to Dr. Dawson, who was the principal, and I think he's still the headmaster. But we had the most elite people at that school. Like, we had Macaulay Culkin and his family were all there, Kiernan and everybody, Scarlett Johansson, you name it. Like, were you ever going to go there, or was the independent learning environment working for you?
I don't think so. Yeah, it was learning for me. It was always, I always loved school, and I was, like, I truly loved it, so I feel like I adapted pretty well, and it was always a priority for my family and I throughout my life, because it was just something that always kind of grounded me in the sense of, like, no matter, you know, what I was filming or not doing or whatever, I knew I could come back and kind of center around my studies. And
got it.
That was why I ended up, even though, like, I started college right out of high school, and then I worked a bit and kind of was like, do I need to finish? That's why in my early 20s, I ended up going back and finishing and getting my degree, because I was, you know, I wanted to, like, have that grounding again and kind of, you know, learn about myself a little bit more outside of the business and all
yeah.
of that. I loved it.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I was there for that though. A part of it, at least on the tail end of it. When we really reconnected, which
yes.
was really cool. But
yeah.
the cool part is that I feel like Kim was always there and always rooting for me and always a safe space, even during times of, like, sort of just, like, confusion, because, you know, transferring over from being a young actor to then becoming sort of like this, like, early 20s Hollywood world, like, it's not easy.
Oh no.
Like, after the Disney Channel days and getting to see you here and there, we kind of went in different directions. So can you just fill me in? Because I think I have an idea of it, but where were you, say, after the Halloween Town stuff? Like, where did you go from there? You kept working. Did you go back to New York? Did you want to do theater?
No, I stayed in California the whole time.
Right.
I just was working even through my my high school like graduation. I was working on Bringing Down the House at the time and like had to negotiate my graduation day off and was like, okay, well, can we get her prom day off too? And they were like, no, we can't do the prom. We can do the graduate. Like, it was a whole thing, but which I appreciated that, you know, yeah, they were willing to do. But I ended up working half the day of my prom, working half the day. They shot me out. And then I went to, then aww, I went to prom. But anyway.
Who was your prom date?
Well, you see, the school that I had a girlfriend go with me, and then we had a part of the dance where we had our one of our parents come in. And we, as a school, because our graduating class, I was in this, like, umbrella organization that for kids that did independent study. So yeah, there wasn't a ton of, like, my graduating class, I think, was only, like, 18 people. But yeah, yeah, it was...
Mine was 50, so it's not okay, that much
more. Yeah, not that much more. But we, so we had, like, sports teams, and it kind of gave some, like, social and other events and stuff like that. But so yeah, my prom was actually like on a yacht in Marina Del Rey.
And nice.
We had like, so we had the fun dinner aspect of it. But then one part of it was with like my dad came and we got to take swing dancing lessons leading up to the prom. So I actually have a picture from our set photographer Bringing Down the House with my dad in a tux and Queen Latifah like hanging out on set talking. And I was like, well, this is a snapshot of my life. Like at the time,
yes,
you know, I was like working and then going, you know, going to prom, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. Like it was, you know, I man, was loving life at that point. But
what was it like to work with Queen Latifah? We've been watching her a lot. My daughters are currently obsessed with Little Mermaid, and she, when I tell you, did the most amazing Ursula in the live version.
I don't think I saw that version. I have to watch.
Please,
that.
Do
I
yourself
loved
a favor.
Little Mermaid as a kid.
Okay, well, do yourself yeah, a favor. When I tell you that there is no other Ursula better in a live action than, in my opinion,
I forgot than Queen Latifah. She did that. I want to see her in it. She was incredible. She just is so down to earth. Came up. I mean, that it really says a lot when you go to a big table read, starting a big film like that. That just had, I mean, Eugene Levy and Jean Smart and Joan Plowright and Betty White, Steve Martin, all the, you know, just all the greats. And you go into a room like that, and it's so intimidating. And it, she just walked right up, introduced herself, gave me a hug. So happy to have you here. And we just, it, she felt like an old friend immediately. And that's kind of the way everybody was on set. Like, it just
it was
just, we just had a fun time making a fun movie. Like, yeah, yeah, it was.
Now, you've
it
been just, pretty lucky, but have, I mean, you don't have to name names, but have you had a negative experience on set? Like, have you ever felt like, oh, this energy's bad?
I've had little things here and there, it, yeah, not nothing crazy and nothing
good,
you know, like, but for the most part. And I think some of those situations were actually kind of fun for me because they kind of teach you about yourself and you kind of go, okay, well, how, you know, did I handle that the way I wanted to or whatever? You get to like kind of stretch out of your comfort zone and go, okay, well, this is how I would respond in this situation. And you kind of, you know, you get to learn about yourself, like, in
yeah,
those moments. And I didn't go anything through anything that was too stressful or too traumatic or anything like that. But, you
right,
know, I had silly things like girlfriends of guys that I had to date in the movie come and like watch the whole time as if, you know, as if something
oh,
was going to happen.
Being
or
protective,
like little things that like,
yeah,
you know, that were,
yeah,
I guess those were kind of those elements of like those high school type things that I went through
uh-huh,
on set versus, you know, in public school. So.
So speaking of dating and co-stars and whatnot, I mean, it's inevitable that we have to talk about your paramour.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm actually, I don't know, I'm sure you've talked about this maybe on other podcasts, but please, like, I'm excited to get the dish. When we reconnected and we were really getting to spend more and more time with each other, I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my little world became very different and I wasn't able to hang out as much. And then, of course, we moved to Orange County.
Yes.
And you had mentioned at some point in that time frame that there was somebody that you were going to just like hang out with. And you
which
were like,
is what
yeah,
I thought
I mean,
it was going to be. Yeah.
You were like,
yeah,
this is what it is. You're like, I don't know what it is. You know, I've had a lot going on, but like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to try it out and see. Right.
Mm hmm.
All
yeah,
right.
It was very unexpected. We had first reconnected. I reached out to him because I wanted him to do some sketches for my YouTube channel.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it would be fun to for the fans just to see somebody that they knew. And I guess, seen him for, I guess, at least a good 10 years, maybe 15, because we worked together in Halloween Town 2.
We're talking about Daniel.
Daniel, yes.
Yes, Daniel Kuntz, is her boyfriend.
Who played Cal in Halloween Town 2.
Should I say
Town
boyfriend 2. Or partner at this point? Like, he's your partner.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, either, like, I guess, yeah, either interchangeable at this point.
Right,
But, yeah, we had worked together when I was 16. And
on a little movie.
And just a little movie, and had played, you know, he was my arch nemesis, and then hadn't seen each other for at least 10 to 15 years, because we'd hung out a little bit after filming.
But had you had a crush on him?
No.
Like, anything?
Yeah. No, we got along really well, like, okay. During filming, had a great time.
And, interesting.
But no, there was nothing like that at the time. He was with somebody, right. And it just wasn't,
oh,
you know,
sure, sure.
Yeah, so it just, but...
But wait, was his the girlfriend that came to set? It was...
No.
Okay, because no, totally that different been, movie. Like, she was right.
No. No, totally different movie. So we had hung out a couple of times after working together, but then we kind of stayed like Facebook friends for like 15 years. And then
sure.
I was like, oh, that would be cool. So I reached out to him, and so we ended up getting together to like have a drink and just chat and catch up. And then started developing sketches with some friends of mine from Second City and UCB. And then things just started unexpectedly kind of turned romantic. And I was like, oh, neither of us were looking for it at the time or anything,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But that's kind of when it happened. So it was, it was really fun to be able to, it was nice because we knew each other, but also we're getting to know each other again, kind of as older adults. And, you know, we had that friend aspect that kind of, you know, led to more, which was, you know, it's kind of nice when it happens like that.
I mean, I think it's super singular in the way that you guys shared such an important sort of like, that's just an important time for so many people that it blows their minds to see you guys together.
Yes.
And so you guys end up like kind of having fun and starting to riff with TikToks and stuff. And so like now you guys do a lot of TikToks together and it's amazing.
Me too. He's a good sport. Yeah. I find some, you know, there's been some fun ones. He'll usually jump in on some fun trending dances that I feel like we can get away with doing that we don't look like we're, you know, trying to be, you know, like some of the dances that come up, I'm like, oh, okay, no, that's, no,
yes.
that's not happening.
I'm but, terrified of trying to do a TikTok dance. I'm like, I wish I could do that. No.
Some of them are, I just think some are a little bit easier than others and I go for the easy ones. And then
Good. He
dances around and makes the best expressions. And then like it, you know, he has a lot of fun with it. And so the fans over the years have just been having it's been so much fun communicating with them and like, you know, seeing their reaction to it all. Cause we waited a bit before I posted anything. It was a couple, maybe a year.
It was like a year or two. Yeah.
It was a bit. And then.
Well, and he wasn't a part of everything you were doing. So like you had your YouTube channel, you said like you were doing it for a little bit before he came on board. Like what were you were launching. When had you launched it?
I had started it so early on and didn't. I think when I first started, I didn't know quite like what to do with it. And then it slowly kind of developed where I was doing more like vlogging and stuff like that. And then after I trained at Second City and Upright Citizens Brigade with improv for a while. And then I was like, oh wait, I want to like, I can film sketches and that sort of thing. And then I ended up going into like writing and filming my own stuff. So that was when I started to want to do like more original comedy and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And started bringing more people in to, you know, to have some fun with me.
Yes. I mean, and that's what I don't think if people don't know, because they know you from this legacy of all the amazing things that you were, where you were like the main hero, heroine. And, I get that. Trust me. I get that. But like, you also have this amazing film career with like Be Cool.
That was a really fun one. Yeah.
I remember seeing her in Be Cool and she's this like super amazing, completely believable goth chick. I mean, I was like blown away. I've heard tons of people talk about Tumbleweeds, but that's going way back. But you know, what I loved about your career is that you really, really, and I don't mean this lightly and I don't say this lightly, you could be an indie queen tomorrow. Like you, I feel like could have you could have a career and an Oscar in your 50s and 60s. Like, I'm not even kidding you. Like, your career
you.
Is
That's
just getting going because you have that. You have that talent, and it's not going to go away. And if anything, it's just going to, people are just going to eventually be able to see you for who you are. And like, I hope that I can have that too. But basically, it's great to see us expanding, empowering ourselves, doing different things, connecting with our fans because we care about them.
Absolutely.
You certainly care about your fans. Like, you're always going places and traveling, especially around Halloween, right?
That is usually my busiest time of year, but I love doing appearances and conventions and stuff like that because the fans have, I mean, they are the reason that DCOMs and all of it is still talked about and still so much in the culture and everything. I could have never, people ask me all the time, well, okay, so did you know, like, when you were filming it that it was going to be this film, you know, this cult film? And I'm like, no, like, we didn't even know we were gonna, you know, be able to do a sequel or more. Like, it was so new at the time, and it's been like this, you know, pardon the pun, but magical adventure to watch it grow, you know, with Disney Channel and just
and
become,
and now it's actually not even belonging to Disney Channel, in my opinion. These memories that we've given these kids, they far outweigh the hold that Disney has within its streaming service or channel. Like, these kids, they love us independent of the DCOMs and, mm-hmm. and the memories that we were able to give them. And I'm sure that we're grateful to, you know, the Gary Marshes out there that were in charge at the time. But at the same time, this is what we've created. This is our legacy, that our childhoods and all of the predating experience that we had in New York and all mm-hmm. the training and all of the sacrifice that, you know, we kind of did have to make to get to that point led mm-hmm. us to be those young performers. And it was a privilege. I know you don't take that lightly as well. You're just like me.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful. And I so appreciate, I mean, I appreciate that anybody watches anything that I do,
right.
But it's incredible that they still watch it year after year. And then to be a part of family's traditions, and I get so many notes all the time of just what it, you know, it means to their family and to them. And there have been so many days now that I've been having a rough day and I get a note from somebody that just touches me so deeply. And it's like, it gives back to me in a different way. Cause people always ask me like, oh, are you ever tired of talking about Marnie? And,
right.
Or, you know, do you ever get sick of it? And I'm like, that would be awful. First of all, because it's not like it's a part of, you know, like that it's a part of everything. And if I can bring a little bit of joy to anybody, especially now, but like that's such a privilege. And
this is true. Nostalgia did not exist the way that it exists now. And for us specifically mm-hmm. in when we were growing up, it just, this is a whole new phenomenon in the way that people are sort of glomming on to this past in a way that's almost cathartic. And it's not just, oh, get over it. Like, it's just not that simple. And people listening to this obviously are fans and following you. And so, okay, so what are we, can we just get you or can I help you produce some sort of amazing, not official, like, Halloween Town-esque movie? Like, what do you want to do with your future? Like, what are your goals? What are your wildest dreams?
The fans definitely, I mean, they would love to see, you know, another, they ask me all the time and I'm like, well, they know that I'm open to it if they, you know, ever decide to pull that trigger. Like, and it's,
right.
But it's, that's another thing that still amazes me is just that I get literally asked that every day on social media. And it's just, mm-hmm. It's such an honor that people, you know, still want to see what's going on. But
well, and if it wasn't Halloween Town, though, I'm sure it could be a character that you create that's mm-hmm. you now, that represents the kind of woman you are now, and or even just that kind of archetype of a heroine in a magical world. And like, because again,
I was
like,
actually reading a couple books lately that I was like, oh, this would be a fun, this kind of story would be a fun story to kind of like be a more you know, mature side of like a lot of that genre, you know. There's so much, especially it's such a bigger genre overall than it was even when Halloween Town first came out. I mean,
oh my God,
the supernatural
Harry Potter.
And all of that. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was before Harry Potter.
Yeah. All those amazing characters and different shows and movies that have come out since that have really just expanded that whole, all of the possibilities and the imagination of that world. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so good. Oh, Kim, thank you so much for like sort of just only brushing the surface of sort of who you are. I'm always just so happy to chat with you, to reconnect to my past and not be ashamed of it, because we've worked really hard. It's nice to talk about it and in a way that's framed in a really just kind of like, I want to say normal way, but it's a healthy way. I think there's many ways of looking at it. Like there's days when I have hard days and I want to like blame, I want to be negative it's rare, by the way, because I've really kind of outgrown all of that with empowering myself into making my own opportunities.
And you have done an amazing, you've amazing job at that. You have built just all of these incredible projects. I'm so impressed and admire what you've built over the past few years, truly.
Thank you, babe. Thank you so much. I know you mean that. And the other cool thing is that I love that you're working with Lacey on Hallmark movies and you're back into the soap game. What else, where can we find you? Like, tell us.
I have, I actually did an episode. I don't know if I'm allowed to say which one. I guest starred on a Disney animated show.
Oh, good.
I did a voice. And I don't know if they've said it yet, but it's one of their shows that's on Disney Channel that I'm hoping it's coming out at the end of the year. But
fun.
That was
what was that like? What was that like?
It was a blast.
Were they like, oh my gosh?
Yeah. It had been a minute since I had been in the animated booth like that. I did a lot of that when I was younger, and I did Bug's Life, and I was the voice of Silly Rabbit Trickster for Kids for a while, and like cool things like that. But it had been a minute, and I had so much fun, and it was crazy that we did like a whole episode in like 45 minutes.
That's crazy.
Incredible. The different.
Yeah.
I so admire people that work in that genre so consistently, because it's incredible what they do with so little in front of them, without a camera in front of them. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And you have a beautiful voice too. I don't know if people realize that, but your singing voice, your speaking voice, everything. So then where else can we find you? Obviously you're on TikTok. You're on YouTube.
I am on TikTok. I'm working on some like longer form sketches for that.
Cool.
So I'm on that. I'm on Facebook and Instagram too. And then I've got my Etsy shop, which we work on year round. It's grown into graphic tees and keychains. I started it with custom paintings years ago, but now we do patches and greeting cards and all kinds of stuff. So that keeps my like creative juices flowing when I'm, not auditioning and not working, which is nice.
I know, it is really cool. Okay, well there you go. So we've got TikTok, we've got Etsy, and also from time to time you will be able to catch her at a Comic-Con. We just did 90s Comic-Con together. That was a lot of fun.
That was a blast. Yeah, I'll be in Gatlinburg in July in Tennessee doing. Daniel's actually doing that one with me. We're doing the Smoky Mountain Fan Fest in July, and have a few others probably coming up. But yeah, I love those because you get to get out of like the day to day aspects of the business and kind of reconnect to the amazing fans and why we do all of this. And to kind of tie it all back around, I think I probably learned that best from Debbie Reynolds, actually, because she was so great with fans, like so appreciative. And now that I look back, older, I realize that she kind of showed me what a gift it is to be able to perform and for people and make them happy. And so now that is always just, my
highest
goal.
You get to carry the torch. Yeah.
My highest goal is just to try to, just help people have a better day.
Amen, lady. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us. And, obviously I wish you well, and I hope to hang out with you soon. And maybe even do a double date.
That would be great. Either the next time you're out this way, or it's been a bit. Yeah. It's been a minute since I've been in Texas.
Well, I love you, Kim, and I'm always here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Vulnerable is hosted by me, Christy Carlson Romano, produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham, and executive produced by Brendan Rooney. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. Follow Vulnerable wherever you listen to podcasts so you can join me every week for a vulnerable conversation. And be sure to follow Vulnerable on Instagram and TikTok at The Vulnerable Podcast. And make sure to tune in to my YouTube to watch the video version.